Okay. The Battle for Kyiv is a replay of the Battle for Stalingrad, except the players are changed. And the Russians have made the same historic mistakes that the Germans made back in World War II.
Trump's suing Hillary for Russia disinformation. It's going to bring forward to those who don't believe or didn't report on the Russia collusion disinformation. It's going to bring it to light for those who didn't see it.
Hour two, the Friday edition of Justice and Drew, is underway. Thank you to everybody for sending in those talkbacks through the iHeartRadio app. We are a big fan of those. We certainly appreciate getting them, and we love hearing them, even the ones we don't play on the air. I listen to most of them.
I do, too.
Yeah. Oh, I know you do.
Yeah.
You have to choose which ones are putting on the air.
I listen to them, too, because I listen to them when
John hears them when Drew
plays them.
So thanks to everybody for taking part. Very pleased and excited to welcome into the program our Friday roundtable participants from Powerline, Scott Johnson. Good morning.
Thank you for having me back, Drew.
Thank you for coming back. Always a pleasure. And lawyer extraordinaire, Jeff O'Brien.
Good to be here.
Got to have one Wright County representative on the roundtable each week. It seems anyway.
It's a requirement.
So are we the most qualified roundtable guests in history? You know, in the spirit.
This is one of the smartest roundtables, I think, that we have assembled.
I deny that.
Well, I don't want to diminish Liz Collin from last week.
No, not at all.
You know, either. So, you know, that collective brain power there as well.
Yeah.
I don't know, it could be a challenge for these two.
Or Rob Dorr.
Yeah, seriously.
It was a pretty potent combination as well.
I'm joking. That was a joke.
I'm gonna put you guys in the spot real quick. We had that talk back, which people can use on the iHeartRadio app. Sign up for the free account. You can leave us a 30-second message. We'll be playing back on the air. But we were working through Sam's top five. We had Biden saying the U.S. would respond to Russia. Respond in kind.
Yeah.
Okay. If Putin uses chemical or biological weapons. And then we had the story out of the AP saying that the war is entering kind of a dangerous phase just because of the efforts that the Ukrainians have put up, and they seem to have stalled. And if the NATO numbers of the death toll between 7,000 and 15,000, is that what it was?
That was the upper
are correct. I mean, that's astonishing in terms of Russian losses. So, Scott Johnson from Powerline, we'll start with you, and then Jeff will ask you. I'm just curious to get your thoughts on where this is going in your mind when you see where we are now and the fact that, you know, we're a month into it. Putin still hasn't taken Kyiv. I think everybody is stunned at the amount of opposition Ukraine has put up. Any thoughts on where you think this whole thing is heading at this point?
I was just thinking, driving in this morning, I was last with you guys 4 weeks ago, right after the invasion started, and I thought it was going to be over in a weekend.
Yeah.
I'm really stunned at where we are with the fight the Ukrainians have put up and the support for them that has materialized and that they've taken advantage of. Where it is right now, I thought you were going to ask about Biden. I just can't believe.
But feel free to comment on that.
How feeble and infirm and inane he sounds.
Mm-hmm.
He seems to be announcing everything going through his mind, where it would, I think, be to our advantage to let it be known that if anything untoward, like chemical weapons or a nuclear weapon, happened, that there would be extreme, you know, consequences for the Russians, and leave it at that rather than the kind of announcing in advance whatever it is he intends to do. It seems to me very ineffective. And the whole purpose of his trip to have everybody on board with sanctions, the sanctions aren't going to do the job. They didn't deter it, and he's therefore deter the invasion, as several officials of his administration announced that they were intended to do. And he's therefore denying that that was what their purpose is. The sanctions are not going to cause the Russians to withdraw or put the Ukrainians over the top. I really think they need to recalibrate and figure out what our objective is at this point. And that does not seem apparent to me that they've done that.
Yeah, I agree with Scott. You know, in some ways, the sanctions may have the opposite impact, where you have Putin using it for his own propaganda, saying that, you know, trying to turn his people, you know, against the West.
Yeah.
I just don't know what we're going to do. Like, to Scott's point, Biden just ambles around like a weak and feckless man. And there's this comment yesterday about how we're going to respond in, with, you know, in like kind. So what is he saying? What does that mean? Are we going to use chemical weapons on the Russians? So far there's been no interest in even providing, you know, weapons or anything or equipment to Ukraine. What does he mean by that? It's just kind of vague, you know. There was some talk that, you know, Trump says that he told Putin, if you invade Ukraine, I'll bomb Moscow. If that's true, this statement from Biden is a real milquetoast version of that.
Well, and I can't help but wonder if there isn't. Let me go this way. There's an opportunity here if we had a leader, in as much as inside Russia, they're suffering. Mm-hmm. Like, the sanctions haven't deterred Putin from doing what he's doing, but it's having a drastic negative impact on the economy in Russia. The Russian people are suffering. He doesn't have, you know, untold amounts of money to continue to do this. There was an argument that he didn't have the money in the first place to go into Ukraine. And my point is, if we had a leader or a Trump at this point in time, like, I could envision Trump, if he were in office right now, wanting to bring the sides together. Let's talk. Again, provide Putin an opportunity to get out of this.
Give him a golden bridge to surrender. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Yeah. That, and if we had a leader, I just see. And again, I'm a goofy talk show host. I don't know. But I certainly see that he stalled. They're losing troops. He's not gaining favoritism in Russia. There seems to be a great opportunity here if some leader could step up and go, hey, a timeout, flag on the field. Why don't we all get together and see if we can't find a resolution to this whole thing?
Well, and I read somewhere yesterday that I guess Milley and Austin tried to contact the generals or the top brass in the Russian military, and they didn't even take the call.
Any overture like that, I don't think is going to work coming from this administration.
No.
I don't know if it would have worked coming from the Trump administration or not, but I don't think it'll work coming from this administration.
Their strategy almost seems to be, let's sit back and sit on our hands, you know, more the leading from behind, and have this naive hope that somehow the oligarchs or the generals are going to somehow, you know, stage a coup and take Putin out. And I think that's a risky gamble.
When you refer to the Russian difficulties, the difficulties of the Russian people, I think Putin's back door is China. And it's not clear to me that the administration really understands the situation. They seem to have, before the invasion occurred, they seem to have counted on China. They confided in China that they understood Putin was going to invade, that they had the intelligence suggesting that. Well, of course, Russia and China had agreed to cooperate in that 5,000-word manifesto that they signed off on during the Olympics, that suggested that China was in on it and supportive of the whole thing. And the administration's reach out to China seems like a joke under the circumstances, like they really don't get it. So it's very unclear to me that they have an achievable objective at this point that doesn't just protract the misery.
Well, isn't that sort of the hallmark of Democrat administrations in recent years in this country? I mean, one of my biggest gripes during the Obama years was I could never articulate what our foreign policy was, and nobody ever bothered. I had no idea what our goals were any time we were engaging in any sort of conflict overseas or doing any sort of deal. It never made any sense, and it certainly never seemed to be a proposition where he was putting America first and American interests first. And you get the same thing with the Biden administration. I don't know what his goals are. I don't know what his plans are.
Well, the way they've been treating it, it's like they treat every other issue, Drew, is they look for a political bounce out of something, and when they don't get it, they move on to the next thing. So if you remember the first week, it was all Ukraine, and stand with Ukraine, and everybody's, changing every bridge has got blue and yellow lights flashing on it. And then that poll came out that said that 62% of Americans thought that Putin wouldn't have done this if Trump was president, and now we named a Supreme Court justice and got rid of masks. I mean, they just move on to the next thing. It's like, I got no political traction from that. Let's move on to the next thing and get rid of this.
Is there a political benefit to be had? If not, move on.
Yeah, we don't address issues. We just look at what the political consequences are and move on to the next
fair
thing.
Well, and dropping back again for a second, it was funny. I was thinking, okay, Drew, because you made a comment, and I agree with you that I don't think that, that Putin's going to be taking any calls out of this administration. And so then going back to sort of my idea, if Trump was in office, he could be the one to step up to say, hey, let's come together. And I'm kind of I'm reminded of when he reached out to North Korea, right? Mm-hmm. And what a big deal that was at the time. But then it's funny, I suddenly realized, okay, in the current crop of leadership that we have, who among them would be that person? And none of the names, Macron, Trudeau, you know, Yeltsin. I mean, none of them to me, I can see stepping up and filling that role, which kind of speaks to, again, I think it goes back to the reason why Putin did what he did at the time he did it, because it doesn't seem like any of these nations, you know, any of these nations' leaders are really all that strong or respected at this point in time.
I think that's a great point. It really lies to the United States, unfortunately,
in
circumstances where we've got Joe Biden and Kamala Harris leading the charge.
Well, you think of the passage of time of this war.
Eric in Forest Lake, go ahead.
Hey, morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Just listening to what you're saying there, and I just wanted to comment real quick. I see it the same way you guys see it. He is a feckless leader, this Biden guy that's supposedly stood up in the White House right now. However, he's talking about, you know, all these tough sanctions he's putting on Ukraine and this and that. It almost seems like he's not even a leader at all. I mean, where's our military? Has anybody seen our military speaking up on this? Has anybody seen Biden sitting side by side, you know? It just doesn't seem real. None of this does seem real. This Ukraine thing, I don't know what to think.
Well, it is real. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
I mean, as
I
far,
agree there.
I understand the sentiment. I really do. I mean, you know, we've been lied to so much over the past 6 years between, you know, the Mueller investigation, the Russia hoax, all that nonsense, the BS impeachments, and then all the lies that came with the pandemic and the lies coming from our leaders in that respect. So, I mean, I get the sensation of not... Of having a difficult time believing almost anything coming out of the mainstream media.
Well, and to the question of where our military is, my understanding is they're currently in diversity, equity, and inclusion training.
That's how I've
you know, I mean, we're spending so much time social engineering the military. That doesn't send a good message to our enemies either.
Yeah, I was going to make the point that, you know, going on in the back, there is an unreality to this, as Eric is saying. And I would say the cluelessness is unreal. I've been following while all this is going on. Our negotiations with Iran in Vienna that have been conducted mostly by the friends of Vladimir Putin on our behalf, who have bragged in the meantime that the United States has given away more to Iran than they could ever reasonably have expected. He's made great achievements, apparently, for Iran.
Oh, good.
There's been a
wrinkle. Glad to hear they're doing well. I was really worried about Iran.
But, you know, that's a replay of the Obama administration, only worse. And the deal hasn't been done yet. They've got a wrinkle or two at the end that has complicated it. But the unreality of it, when you talk about, I don't even understand, you know, what's going on. What the deal is, nothing that the administration says to support this imminent arrangement is believable. They say, well, if it would serve our interest to block Iran's path to nuclear weapons, but any deal would be for 2 years and would fund them to the tune of $100 billion in the meantime.
We gave them $150 billion not that long ago.
Well, they've spent it on their terrorist ventures in the meantime.
Like I'm talking to my kids, like, what'd you do with the 20 I already?
Well, and ultimately, I think what this highlights, too, is going back to that, you know, that the day one decision Biden made to kill the Keystone Pipeline and to make us, you know, kind of become an importer again of energy. I think it was one of the news clips before the show started today about how we're going to supply a big chunk of some natural gas to Europe so they can be less reliant on Russia. Well, it would be nice if we were producing oil and could take away their dependence on Russian oil, which is a huge reason why Europe is sitting on its hands right now.
Mm-hmm.
That decision to jump onto the bandwagon with the Green New Dealers,
mm-hmm.
it was probably the single greatest mistake of this presidency so far.
And Ukraine might not have been invaded if that had not happened.
Right.
You really want to look at a thing that you can point to and say, you know, people debate whether or not they would have invaded if Trump were still president or not. But if you really want to look at a thing, you can point to exactly what Jeff said right there.
Well, one more thing. Biden approving the Nord Stream 2 pipeline,
yep.
which Trump had put the kibosh on. You mean Trump was right about that? The kibosh is now back on. And that's another factor that would, you know, goes to the unreality of the whole thing.
And I think that's what people think about when they are asked, do you think Putin would have invaded if Trump were president? Do you think this would all be different if Trump were still president? And for the people that say yes, I think those are the factors that they're considering.
Yeah.
It's not just a matter of, you know, Trump's a tough guy and Putin wouldn't invade because we have tough guy president. No, it's those policy decisions that Trump had made that Biden reversed that enabled Putin to take this course of action.
And it's almost like at this point, they won't course correct and reverse that those decisions, particularly with U.S. You know, oil and gas, for no other reason than to somehow we're worried that we'll give Trump the win or we'll give the other side the win. We're just going to double down on this and let gas prices be what they are and let Putin run wild in Ukraine and threaten other countries. Because God forbid we go back on our stupid decision and admit that we were wrong.
If you want to share your thoughts of what we've been discussing here on Justice and Drew in the comments from Scott Johnson from Powerline and lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, you can use the talk back function on the iHeart radio app. Leave us a message and we'll play those back coming up. Also, 651-989-5855. We'll get you your phone numbers on the way. We'll also shift gears. Speaking of priorities, interesting tweet from an individual who was invited to the White House and the hoops that they must jump through if they would like it to come.
Jill Biden's a jerk.
To this congressional spouse's reception. Plus, we'll turn our attention to some local matters and this bizarre story. Fast food, fast crimes, these suspects that apparently drove up from Texas to commit crimes in Minnetonka. We'll give you the details coming up.
Radio.
If you're going to wreck the train, you're forgetting the Democrats are in charge, so it's all about power and money. All they really want to do is keep this bit of a quagmire going so they can pump money into Ukraine and then skip them off the top. Nothing to do with winning or losing. It's all about bogging down Putin in Ukraine and then keep sending money in that they can just skim off the top for themselves and hope that maybe someday Putin gives up.
Hey guys, and Sam. The one thing I always thought of this Trump's foreign policy is from the scene from Blazing Saddles where Sheriff Bart pulls the gun on himself and the crowd's like, shh, hey, he's crazy enough. He just might do it. So that's my two cents. Thanks. Bye.
Those are courtesy of the iHeartRadio app TalkBack. Thank you to everybody who has been using that to communicate with us. We appreciate it here on Justice and Drew, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM.
Welcome back into studio. Our Friday roundtable guests, lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, Scott Johnson from Powerline. Those two will compete against Sam in the Friday news quiz coming up in a little over an hour from now. If you want to win $100 from Twin Cities Cannabis,
boom,
you just make a prediction. Who do you think is going to win, Jeff, Scott, or Sam?
And
if you are correct in that prediction, you will be entered into a drawing for $100.
Their roll-on menthol CBD is just magic.
It is. I see it sitting right there.
Yeah, and I used it earlier. It is the stuff. It is the stuff of pain-free dreams.
Just don't ask Sam to apply it.
It's true. That's true. Before we switch gears,
limits.
Talk about some local issues. Also, this invite of congressional spouses to the White House. Let's go to the phones and talk with Steve in Belle Plaine. Thanks for holding on, Steve. Welcome to Justice and Drew, Twin Cities News Talk. You want to talk Ukraine?
Yeah. So, you know, it's pretty comforting thinking that Biden's a bad person and an idiot leading us astray. But so all your listeners know who all these people are, and your panel there, they know who they are. So let's say if you have a fistful of straws and the short straw is the worst person in our government involved in Ukraine, would the short straw belong to Biden, Harris, Pelosi, Schumer, Milley, Austin, or Blinken? Which one's the worst? Think about that a while. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Don't tell me what to do.
My instinctive reaction is Kamala, but that's... That's my reaction.
Yeah,
out of everybody,
I think so. Out of everybody you listed,
it is a very short
it's a
line
rogues gallery of dumb,
and it's a short line between her and Biden. I mean, really,
yeah, it's like a it's a usual suspects lineup of stupid sitting right up there.
Biden has more experience, but his cognitive ability is weighing him down like an anchor. You know, whereas
Kamala's just incompetent,
and then there's just passage of time.
Yeah, she's perpetually the kid that didn't read the book and tries to do the book report.
Yeah,
Yeah. I mean, every soundbite that comes out of her, I mean, that the significance of the passage of time clip, it's almost like she was told you need to speak for 10 minutes. And so she's vamping to cover the time.
It sounds like some, you know, like that clip specifically reminds me of, you know, sort of that college age person who for the first time in their life just had this idea. Like, oh my God, I can't believe nobody's ever thought of this before, but they're not smart enough to really articulate what it
is. My other thought was she seriously misjudged the strength of the edible she took.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There's that as well.
I think it was James
in Europe. They might have different sort of concentrations over there.
There you go.
Different strains, you know. You never know.
Daily Wire had included the clip from Animal House where the teacher was there smoking the joint with the student and he was going off on the I could be an entire universe in a teeny monocle molecule in my nail and can I buy pot from you? I mean that was like the best clip that could have been associated with that. Erica Donalds, she is the wife of Representative Byron Donalds, NFL player. Is that right? She plays for Seattle, I think. Maybe. I think so.
I'll accept it.
First Lady Jill Biden, Erica Donalds, tweeted out, was kind enough to invite me and other congressional spouses to a reception at the White House. I just had to take a COVID test, and as an unvaccinated person with natural immunity, I won't be allowed to eat, drink, or talk to anyone. Should be a blast.
Yeah, this is the mask guidance coming from the First Lady, Dr. Jill Biden. for this spouses of current congressional members reception that she was holding. Fully vaccinated guests are not required to wear a mask on the White House grounds. Guests who are not fully vaccinated must wear a mask at all times, including abstaining from eating and drinking. Not just like take the mask off while you're doing it. No, you must abstain. No shrimp croquette for you. And maintain at least 6 feet distance from others while on the White House grounds. Why would you even go?
Yeah, that's basically why they did it.
Yeah, that is why they did it.
That's the reason why they did
it. There's no science here. There's no science here whatsoever. Okay, if the fully vaccinated or if the non-fully vaccinated people went to that thing and wore the mask all the time, the fully vaccinated people would stand just as much a chance of catching COVID if one of them were carrying it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no science here involved. This is Dr. Joe Biden wanting to shame and embarrass those that did not get the full round of vaccinations.
I was thinking it was pursuant to the guidance of Dr. Anthony Fauci. Who? The science is Dr. Fauci.
Never heard of him.
This story here, it's wild, man. Out of Fox 9, two suspects have been charged in a series of smash-and-grab break-ins at fast food restaurants throughout the western suburbs after multiple police departments coordinated to connect the crimes to a traffic stop. So, Jamil Gibbs, 30, and Trevion Green, 27, both of Houston, Texas. So did they travel up here? And they say, let's go do crime there.
Is Minnesota a crime tourist destination now?
They have been charged
Is crime tourism a thing?
Mm-hmm.
They've been charged with two counts of third-degree stealing, commit felony, and two counts of second-degree building tool possession, each for their involvement in what police believe were back-to-back burglaries at multiple Taco Bell and Wendy's locations. So according to Minnetonka Police, on Tuesday, the officers were dispatched to a Wendy's for a reported burglary through the drive-thru window. When the officers arrived, they found the drive-thru window had been shattered and the office rummaged through. The safe had been cut into with some sort of tool and money was stolen. There were no suspects at the time. A short time later, officers were then dispatched to a Taco Bell a half mile away. For the same report, shattered drive-through window, office rummaged through, money was taken. That was an anomaly. We don't normally see a string of the same type of location being hit all in one night. This is according to a sergeant with the Minnetonka Police Department. Taco Bell was able to provide video surveillance of the incident, which showed two men entering through the shattered window wearing gloves and masks and using a bright green grinder tool to gain access to the money inside the safe. However, no suspects remained. After the burglary reports, the Golden Valley Police Department notified Minnetonka officers about a traffic stop that they had made at 2:36 a.m. regarding a white Jeep Grand Cherokee with Texas license plates driving without headlights. So earlier in that night, these dudes got pulled over for driving without headlights. The Golden Valley officers noted a green leafy substance believed to be marijuana in plain view and upon searching the vehicle, located an amount of loose bills in the center console, gloves, and a backpack containing two bright green Ryobi grinders and accessories.
Power tools, basically.
So, I want to stop here for a moment. 651-989-5855. Also, feel free to use the talkback feature if you want to remain anonymous. But why did these officers, obviously they didn't know yet, and we'll get into it in the story, they didn't know yet that there were these other robberies that took place. It sounds as if these robberies took place after these individuals were pulled over or around the same time. But unaware in Golden Valley, these two individuals were involved in these other crimes. Why did they not do anything seeing everything that was in the car? If they thought that there was marijuana in plain view, and everything with everything else in the car, why did they proceed to go and let them? That's the first question that I have.
That is a very fair question.
Because that leads to all kinds of different questions when we talk about these types of stops and what could potentially happen.
And I think, you know, without going too deep on it, I think it's endemic of understaffed, low morale, disheartened police departments. I mean, if we had a society in Minneapolis or in the Minneapolis area right now where police were arresting people for committing a crime and those people were going to trial and actually getting a sentence and serving that sentence, you might be more apt to take action on a situation like this. Whereas, you know, in the situation we have now where we've got restorative justice, we've got this revolving door, police are arresting people and nothing's happening. You know, I think for a lot of cops, they're like, well, you know, we could process this and we could do all the paperwork and anything, but it's not really going to amount to anything.
It's not just that. I think that especially after the Kim Potter case, I think cops are almost petrified to do anything with these traffic stops because they could be facing 20 years to life if it goes wrong.
We'll get into more of this coming up because this does serve as an example of these individuals could have immediately been taken off the streets based off of at least what I believe they had seen in here. But I want to get the thoughts from you listening as well. Again, 651-989-5855. Use the talkback feature on the iHeartRadio app. We'll dive into more of this coming up. Again, suspects charged in multiple Wendy's Taco Bell burglaries were actually pulled over in the middle of all this and let go before the officers knew that they had done anything wrong.
Mm-hmm. Can't you just taste that sound? That's the power of grilling over charcoal. And with the Masterbuilt Gravity Series, get all the flavor of charcoal with the ease of gas. That's charcoal flavor, made easy.
Guests of Dr. Jill Biden's should all wear masks that say, "Let's go, Brandon."
Hello. We need to start referring to diversity, inclusion, and equity in that order. The initials line up better. Thank you.
Good morning, guys. Love this talkback feature. The question for you. Has Joe Biden been nominated for his Nobel Peace Prize yet?
I'm sure he has. Probably already won a couple. Welcome back to your Friday edition of Justice and Drew. 1 hour from now, we will find out who the champion of the news is.
I'm nervous.
For this week. You okay in there?
No, I'm scared. I have two really smart people here.
Now, for what it's worth, my wife said, you know, Sam's going to win.
Oh, gosh.
Great. Love you, too.
If you want to win $100 from Twin Cities Cannabis, make a prediction. Scott Johnson, Jeff O'Brien, and Sam Sansevier are your contestants, and you can make that prediction via email, jd@twincitiesnewstalk.com, or on Twitter. Just make sure you either tag us at JDTCNT or use the hashtag TCNT. Otherwise, we might not see it.
Working through this story from Fox 9, two suspects, a 30-year-old and a 27-year-old, both of Houston, Texas, have been charged in a series of smash-and-grab break-ins at fast food restaurants Taco Bell and a Wendy's throughout the western suburbs of Minnetonka after multiple police departments coordinated to connect the crimes to a traffic stop. So these two individuals, in one night, they went through the drive-through windows and rummaged through the offices and stole money at both a Wendy's and a Taco Bell. Taco Bell was able to provide security surveillance footage of the incident and showed them entering through the shattered windows wearing gloves, masks, and using a bright green grinder tool to gain access to the money inside the safe. No suspects remained at the time. After the burglary reports, the Golden Valley Police Department notified Minnetonka officers about a traffic stop that they had made at 2:36 a.m. that same night regarding a white Jeep Grand Cherokee with Texas license plates driving without headlights. The Golden Valley officers noted a green leafy substance believed to be marijuana in plain view. They searched the vehicle, located a large amount of loose bills in the center console, gloves, a backpack containing two bright green grinders and accessories, and again, matching everything that had been used in the other other robberies. Nevertheless, they were free to leave.
Okay.
And the break-ins continued.
Sure? Yeah, I imagine they did.
Minnetonka began monitoring dispatch calls when they noticed the same operation, break-in through a drive-through window at both a Wendy's and a Taco Bell, except this time it happened in Plymouth. They viewed the surveillance footage. Police were able to determine the crimes appeared to be committed by the same suspects. Minnetonka police were able to obtain a MnDOT camera surveillance to track the whereabouts of the Jeep throughout the crime spree, connecting them effectively to the same getaway vehicle.
After receiving body cam footage from Golden Valley police, officers were able to identify the suspects as the defendants, who were then also connected to the suspects in surveillance footage of the break-ins. But after burglarizing the Minnetonka and Plymouth businesses and barely escaping arrest, well...
Hey, Sam, this is where you come in.
The suspects continued again, this time burglarizing the Taco Bell in Buffalo.
Through the law enforcement databases, the white Jeep Grand Cherokee,
Taco Bell,
a rental from Pearland, Texas, was located in the parking ramp of Mall of America, where the suspects were later apprehended when they returned to it.
How many places did they rob between here and Texas?
That's a great question.
And why did they come from Texas to Minnesota to rob fast food restaurants?
Well, and I wanted...
So many weird questions with this story.
So they obtained a search warrant. They got a phone from one of the individuals. They determined the room at the Grand Stay Hotel in Delano.
Ah,
now you're connected, Drew. Oh,
now I'm connected.
Inside the hotel room, they located a backpack.
In the hotel near me.
They located.
Stop him, Drew.
They located the backpack containing the grinding tools, the grinding wheels, shoes, gloves that matched the ones the suspects wore during the burglaries. This seemed to be a pattern for these suspects, noting the break-ins in the same chains in Fargo and West Fargo are being investigated into being connected with them as well. So there's another answer to your question, Drew. This is a great example of how resources pulling together can do great things. This is one of those times where we got lucky and we were able to clear a large amount of burglaries in a short period of time. Okay, so stop. I want to back up to that stop, though. Why did those officers let those guys go? And that to me is and should be the focal point of the story, because it seems to me that if they had stopped those individuals and determined that that was marijuana, mm-hmm. right, they had reason. They were driving without headlights. And what if something had happened afterwards? What if one of those robberies had took place after they were let off from that stop?
And had gone wrong.
And had gone wrong or whatever.
People got hurt. Yeah, I mean, the marijuana thing, I don't know exactly, you know, what the laws are in terms of what police are able to do or what they can do if they spot. I mean, I know if you have less than an ounce of marijuana, and it sounds like this was much less than an ounce because it just was a green leafy substance on the dash. It's just a misdemeanor. It's not a arrest you and bring you in kind of thing.
But one could deduce that they might have been high at the time.
There's a lot of things they could have deduced from this. And that's just off this description. Noticing a green leafy substance, a large amount of loose bills, gloves, backpack, power tools, and accessories. Knowing that there have been burglary reports, it is kind of mind-boggling why these police officers in this stop didn't put all this together and think, you know what, these guys may be worth asking these guys a few extra questions.
At 2 a.m.
There you go. You're good.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, you know, if they might have asked these guys what they were up to at 2 a.m. with the lights turned off on their vehicle. I think we spared South Dakota a crime wave. You know, if they circled in from Fargo to the western suburbs and were out on their way to Delano, probably Watertown was the next stop on the way. I wonder what their records were in Texas. I wonder if the officers can pull that up when they stop these guys. I wonder if they're out on bail in Minnesota right now. The story stops short of explaining whether they're being held on bail or whether bail has been set, and if so, in what amount.
Well, I find the whole thing, and this isn't a dig on law enforcement. I would love to hear from law enforcement if they wanted to call anonymously, 651-989-5855, or use the talkback feature on the iHeartRadio app. Just because, you know, we've had so many conversations about these types of stops. They were pulled over because they were driving around without headlights on. You know, and obviously, based off of everything that's in the car, it's very suspicious whether or not it's enough to go and warrant arresting them on the spot. Or at a bare minimum, I don't know how those marijuana checks in terms of sobriety checks go with that, because I would venture a guess that they were probably high at the time when they were doing this. I just based off of the deduction of what's, you know, written in the story. I just find it fascinating that these individuals could have, I mean, something really, really bad beyond their robberies that continued could have happened if they had been stopped in this moment and they weren't.
I would say that I think for a lot of law enforcement, especially in the metro cities like Golden Valley, Brooklyn Park, Crystal, you know, those inner ring suburbs, where you have city councils that have made it clear that if something goes wrong and it, involving law enforcement, they're going to take the side of the person of the other side, you know, and you've got the attorney general sitting over their heads saying, you know, taking away prosecutions of law enforcement away from county attorneys and hiring big gun lawyers to go after them. I think a cop is looking at these situations as like, yeah. To Drew's point, if it's just a misdemeanor,
yeah.
I'm not going to risk the rest of my life for a misdemeanor.
Yep. I mean, again, I think this is endemic of demoralized police. Yep. Police that feel they don't have any support.
I think there's a lot of them out there that are just, I'm marking time and I'm going to retire and get my pension. And I'm getting the hell out of here.
Yeah. Let's go to the phone. 651-989-5855. Paul calling from Farmington. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. Easy answers to a lot of the questions. One, the comparison. What could have happened maybe if they looked deeper or if they weren't stopped, et cetera. It's the same thing as being forced to not chase a fleeing felon or chase a fleeing vehicle, right? You never know what they're fleeing for, but they're under orders to let them go. So the comparison is always the same. Are cops going to be allowed to do the right job or not? In Golden Valley, those guys are so beaten down. They're down 12 cops in the last year. They're under orders to do nothing. Mm. That vehicle was stopped simply for interest of public safety, driving around without headlights on, right? So they want the headlights back on. The minimal marijuana, they're not going to do anything about it. It's not going to get prosecuted. It's not going to get held. There's no charges coming from that. On top of that, if the officers are white and the people in the vehicle are not white, and they arrest them at all, the equity and inclusion officer in Golden Valley tracks those stats, and it's held as a negative racial interaction mark against the officers, and that is kept in their file for the eternity of their work. So
wow. They
are beaten down, and that's held. That is the straight shot right there.
Wow.
Wow, Paul. Thanks, Paul. Great call.
We don't need to go over the story again just to demonstrate. I mean, it does it itself to demonstrate how dangerous all of that is. If the officers are simply allowed to do their job, then all of those businesses that were robbed afterwards, that doesn't happen.
Congratulations, Left. You have now got people. You have succeeded. You want people factoring race into every decision that they make. Well, it's working. And look at what you've wrought. Congratulations. Now we are factoring race into simply every decision and every interaction. And it is apparently taking a higher priority than public safety. So awesome. Good job. Friend of the show, Rob Dorr. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, doing all right. So, I mean, the marijuana, that's below an ounce is even a petty misdemeanor. So not even technically a crime in Minnesota. That's not an arrestable offense. The Hennepin County Jail will not even take misdemeanor arrestees unless they've shown a propensity for not showing up for court. So since this happened in Hennepin County, if they were to show up at the jail would literally turn away a misdemeanor arrestee unless there was a substantial likelihood that they weren't going to show up to court. So I think just kind of reading between the lines there, I think the officers had a lot of suspicion, but nothing reached probable cause where they could actually affect an arrest. And that, you know, so they're making all of these notes of everything they saw that looked really suspicious. But we don't know what the guys are saying. Maybe the guys had potentially legitimate excuses. Maybe they just stayed silent and the cops really didn't have much to rise to probable cause. But I think Jeff's point was spot on, is that the cops in the metro are so apprehensive to take any action absent like clear and convincing evidence for just fear of public backlash, especially if they're part, you know, if it's against people of protected classes.
Well, and to Rob or to Jeff, what's the threshold in terms of sobriety when it comes to being high on pot while driving, and how do they even determine that at this point? Rob, do you know?
Yeah, so there is no effective measurement of intoxication when it comes to cannabis.
Offering of Doritos?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, here, how many of this bag of Doritos can you eat? But the other side of that is officers, when they do roadside impairment tests, those tests work on any impairment. So when they do the walk and turn and the, you know, and the, you know, foot lift and also, okay. Horizontal eye nystagmus, all of that works on any impairment. So they, but you have to have probable cause that they're intoxicated you can even get them out of the car.
If they start talking about the significance of the passage of time, that might reach probable cause.
Bingo. Thanks for the call, Rob. You know what? And I want to drop back to fascinating input from both Rob and the other caller about what's, you know, going on, you know, in terms of the legality of it and also what's happening inside of Golden Valley. They did get them, right? They did get them, and they ended up going to the hotel room and finding more. So eventually, the right thing was done. But my gosh, again,
yeah,
I mean,
how many places got robbed?
Yeah, this could have been stopped so much sooner.
In between that Golden Valley stop and you know, I don't have it in front of me, but you know, Wendy's, a Taco Bell, another Taco Bell. At least three places got robbed.
Buffalo, yeah. You know, I mean,
didn't they say they finally got them in
Mall of America,
in Delano,
yeah, in Delano,
in Wright County?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, go Wright County.
That'll show you.
Yeah.
You go robbing our Taco Bells.
Yeah. It ends here.
Phil. Good morning, Phil. You're on with Justice and Drew.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah. So listening to your show and the perspective of what happened there, I've been a police officer in Minnesota for quite some time now.
Thank you.
It sounds like Golden Valley, you've got Hennepin County. They don't prosecute petty misdemeanor marijuana possession. That could be one reason they weren't arrested for that. And another, listening to the background of this, they might not have had the information about the burglary tools yet until after the fact, and then somebody recalled it and might have given a tip to the agency about it. So that sounds about right on that one. But, you know, dealing with this prosecuting attorney's office is a nightmare, yeah. To be honest with you. They are very lenient. They like to, push things to the side or plead things down to such a minimum that nobody faces consequences. And then you see the repeated behavior and getting bailed out by the Freedom Fund and everything else. So, it's a frustration with law enforcement right now.
Can you speak to the morale of, you know, at least the circles that you run in with your fellow police officers? What is morale like these days, and how much of the of what you just talked about, you know, the frustration of a lack of prosecutions, how much does that factor into, you know, your day-to-day operations?
Morale is low. I remember when I started law enforcement in I was in another state. I'm not going to say which one, but I was in another state before I came here. I've been in law enforcement since 2001, 2002 time frame. And the morale then was great. You know, everybody loved police, you know, especially after 9/11, you know, everybody really was supportive of first responders. And then, you know, within the past few years, it just seems it has just gone down. You know, nobody wants to do the job anymore. People are leaving early on medical retirements. People are moving into other professions. People are leaving departments to go to other departments and finding the same situation there. And it's just a systemic issue within departments and even dealing with the prosecuting attorney's office that it just, it's frustrating. It's super frustrating. You know, talking to them, you pretty much give it to them on a silver platter at times, or they just won't do anything with it. And, you know, I've had times where I've arrested the same person day by day by day by day.
Wow.
For the same behavior, and they're out before my report's done by then.
Wow.
So,
well, Phil, thank you.
That's got to suck, man.
Thanks for the the info, man. Thank you for what you do. Keep up the the good work too, man. We do appreciate it.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks, guys. You have a great day.
You too.
All right, on deck. We got a news quiz coming up at 8:35. We will get the roundtable's thoughts about the confirmation hearings of Jackson. Next, speaking of crime, one Minneapolis council member tweeted out that she wants everybody to consider a city without police.
Charcoal grilling just got a whole lot easier with the Master Built Gravity Series. The easy-to-light, gravity-fed charcoal hopper keeps a constant temperature for up to 10 hours. The app-controlled fan lets you sear at 700 degrees in just 13 minutes. Handles a low and slow smoke for hours, all on its own. Maximum flavor, minimum effort. Charcoal is now hassle-free with the Master Built Gravity Series.